Well, Ron McQueenie has been working here as a photographer since 1972 and the chief of operations since?
Since 1977.
1977. Obviously, you came here as a fan of this event.
Yes, I did. I came probably, my dad brought me here, I think, in 1947 as a two-year-old, and we've been started coming ever since. And first race I saw was 1956. I missed two while I was in the service in the 60s. And I've been to every event since 56 except for the two in the service. And listen to them on Armed Forces Radio.
I would think that there is no event in motorsports that is documented quite like this one, at least in terms of photography.
For photography, I think this is still considered the most photographed event in the world.
You've got an archive of photographs that goes back to the very beginning. In any estimation of how many photographs you have over at the Hall of Fame Museum?
Well, actually, my staff and I kind of counted them, not individually, but we counted books, and we know how many are in a book. We estimate there's between 3.5 and 4 million images in our library.
I suspect one of the interesting things that happens is during the month of May or at other times, a family member comes in. Maybe it was not a headline driver, but they'd like to have a photograph of their grandfather or their great uncle or a member of their family.
Right, and that happens quite often. And we can usually put our finger on the negative, if not the print, within a matter of a minute and a half to 2 minutes.
Now, how many staff will you have deployed over the month of May?
During the month of May, I have about 45 photographers and with counting runners and office staff and everything, probably up to 50, 55 people.
I assume you work hand-in-hand with the various news bureaus across the country and the world to supply them with the photographs they're interested in.
Yes, we do. And not only internally, we have put up on our website, we have a media site that we use, and people pull those off on an hourly basis.
Now, one of the things in the past that I know has been important is oftentimes your photographs, particularly of incidents, are important in terms of understanding how the cars react to an accident and really helps part of the safety function of racing.
Yes, it is. We do something called crash incident documentation. We call it crash cam, where we have a photographer that goes over after each incident to the car, and we take pictures of all aspects of the car, inside and out, and if the driver is hurt, we try to find out what caused the driver to get hurt, if it's something that we can change on the car, and you know, not just through pictures or through tech or whatever. There's a lot of people involved in trying to make the car and sport safer.
You know, it's interesting. A lot of people like to get involved in racing, and a lot of people probably like to photograph this race, but when you're out there in the well in various places, this racetrack, you know, filming these cars go by, it's not going to paint them apart either.
No, it's not. There's several areas on the track that we shoot that the cars are coming at you at 225, 230 miles an hour. We try to eliminate some of the areas that are very unsafe. We don't allow photographers in areas that we know that there's a very good chance of them getting hurt, and we try to eliminate the possibilities, but there's always that possibility that a car will blow up or a piece or whatever will get into an area that we're shooting. So we try to train the photographers. We have safety meetings with them on almost a daily basis.
And you take those very seriously. I've been a part of those, that you make it very clear what the do's and don'ts are of this job.
Yes, we do, and we pay particular attention to somebody that may be their first or second race. While they may think it's fun, and it is, we enjoy what we do, but it's a very dangerous craft, and we try our best to make sure that people understand that they have to keep watch out behind them, in front of them, where the cars are coming from, and at all times be safe.
Digital technology has changed your business.
Yes, it has. Probably prolonged my career by 10 years or so. But the cameras now are just, they're a breeze to shoot. You still have to have an eye for what you're doing if you're going to be successful. But almost anybody can pick up a camera and do what we do now.
Any given day, we see your staff out on pit lane trying to get that unique shot of the driver to capture their personality and their persona. And sometimes you're very close to them. I suspect there are times when you've got to be very cognizant of their moods and what they're like as an individual.
Yeah, there are several drivers that we know their moods and their idiosyncrasies. And we try to do our job, but do it as, try to stay behind the camera and as far away from them as possible and still do our jobs. We put on long lenses, try not to get in their face, try not to get them when they're debriefing because they there's a lot of concentration involved in that and making the car right and talking to their engineers and mechanics. They can't be bothered with us. So we know basically when we can shoot them and get away with it and when to stay clear or shoot from afar.
I'm assuming there are times when you talk to the drivers and the public relations people about your function so they understand what it is that you're doing.
Yeah, and most of them know us and my staff and the people that are on the road with them weekend after weekend. But the people that come in for one race at a time, the local media, we try to get with the local media and tell them when the good times are and when not to bother the driver. But we also try to take those media. One of my jobs is to see that the photographers, local and national, get the job, get the photographs that they need. So we do we're the go-between for the photographers and the teams.
You get to know these drivers as people as well as professionals, and I suspect there's that small part of you that's a fan that you have to put to the side when there's a wheel-to-wheel battle for an Indianapolis 500 win, and quite frankly, you feel warmer towards one driver than the other.
Well, yeah, you do. When you work with them, it becomes... I will not say that I'm not a fan, because I am. I enjoy what I do. I enjoy the racing, and right now we've got some of the best racing that we've ever had in my 40-year career of doing this. But you have to be aware that you can't go and really, like the fans in the stands will root for their favorite drivers. These are like our neighbors, like our friends. They are our friends. So we don't really play favorites when they're out there working.
Do you have a favorite shot?
Well, my favorite shot to do now is probably on the flag stand at the end of the race in the checkered flag. That's always a challenge for me to get it, and the older I get, the harder it is for me to nail it right on the line. But I'd say right now about 90-95% of the time I get what I need.
You ever seen his work? He tends to nail it more often than not. Ron McQueenie.
Well, Mark Robinson is a PR rep with Firestone Tires. This is a big month, obviously, for Firestone. How busy are you guys back there?
Oh, it's a busy month for us. Over the month, I mean, we produce more than 5,000 race tires for potential use this month. The work actually started for our guys a few days ago, starting to mount the tires and such under the wheels for the teams as we through ROP here and then into the regular practice stretch that starts on Tuesday. It's a big workload.
Are there differences in the tires that you bring to Indianapolis as opposed to Sable and Kiggy or Richmond in the future?
We design tires for different types of racetracks. Actually, this year, the tire that we took to Motegi a few weeks ago, we're using the same spec here this year. So the drivers who were able to run at Motegi have a little bit of experience on that tire, which will help them here. For Indianapolis, it's a completely new compound all the way around on the tires this year. We think we've improved the grip and the wear a little bit with this new compound. It showed well in the open test here about a month ago. So we're looking forward to see how it goes throughout the month.
When a driver comes in, even in a test session, we often see a Firestone rep right there taking measurements on the tire. What exactly are they looking for at that time?
The main thing that our engineers and technicians are doing in the pit lane as soon as the car comes in is take the tire temperatures. They'll test the temperature at three places on each tire, so a total of 12 temperature recordings, just to make sure that the temperatures are pretty even. So if one side of the tire is getting hotter or one side of the car is getting a lot hotter than the other, we can talk with the team about making some adjustments to keep things more uniform.
Yeah, that's a situation involving their setups. Would that be correct?
Correct. They could change some things within the setup, maybe change some air pressures if need be, something like that, to adjust things to work out those issues.
Do you analyze the tires throughout the month? Are you looking for how long they hold up, the abrasion, all those kind of factors?
Oh, absolutely. We monitor every set of tires that goes out there. We track it as far as how many laps they're run on, what kind of speeds they're run on the tire, what kind of ambient track temperatures are occurring at those times when those things are run. So, and then we'll analyze that data on a daily basis to see how the tires are performing. Normally, tire wear will, as the track gets rubbered in more and more throughout the month, the tire wear will get better and better throughout the month.
Now, in various forms of motorsports, a driver or a team will have choices of compounds. Is that a situation here, or is everyone on the same tire?
There's one tire specification that everybody uses. Here at Indianapolis, which is the only track where we do provide it on the IRL circuit, they do have a choice of stagger options here. We have two stagger options available. One is about 3/300ths of an inch. The other is about 4/300ths of an inch. And that way they can adapt the cars a little bit more to the driver's style, depending on who might like a larger stagger.
So given the fact that there are different drivers with different stairs, does that get reflected in the tire wear and performance with these various drivers?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, the success of your tire wear, it depends on driver style. There are guys who and women who can come and make the tires last a long time, but they can maybe be a little bit more conservative or maybe not drive it as hard in the turns or have a more smooth path around the circuit, which will work better. So, and it comes down to driver style, car setup, and just overall car management.
During qualifications, we see not only here but throughout the Indy Racing League Tour, we have drivers who have different philosophies for the long warm-up laps. Some say, I'm going to go quickly, I'm going to get the tire up to heat, that's important to me. Others say, no, I want to not abuse the tire until I'm serious about standing on that pedal. What's your sense of what it takes to wear, in terms of laps, the tire gets up to optimum performance?
A lot of that depends on the ambient conditions. On the cooler days, obviously, it can take, and then depending on the length of the track, it can take 6 to 8 laps to get the tires up to full and preferred operating temperature. On the warmer days, it's much less. So most of it depends on what the conditions are at that time.
We've had a lot of work over the racetrack over a number of years, and sometimes there's just little fixes to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. I suspect you have to adjust to those right away and get an early read on if anything has changed that affects the performance of the cars.
Yes, definitely. Last year was a perfect case in point where they had the repaving of the track, and then they came back and did some of the diamond grinding on just portions of the track, and then we came and tested here and noticed some uneven tire wear, so that raised some concerns, and we've worked closely with IMS officials, and they went back and did the diamond grinding around the complete surface of the track, and that made things much better. As a matter of fact, some people had some concerns that because of the fresh grinding of the track, the tire wear would be worse than it was the previous year. But actually, throughout the month last year, the tire wear that we experienced was better than the previous year.
But from your perspective, these kind of changes have to cause a little bit of anxiety because you've got some pretty significant responsibility, obviously, in this race. And your reputation is also very important to you. So I suspect these kind of things cause you all to scratch your heads and really go to work.
Absolutely. I know our engineers have some sleepless nights now and then because of facts like that. Obviously, the number one top priority of us is to put out a safe race tire for all the drivers to compete on. That is the absolute top priority, and that's why we try to work closely with officials at all the tracks so we can keep abreast of what's going on if we are repaving or changing things. So we can keep things monitored and make sure that the tires have a reliable, consistent race tire.
Mark Robbins with Firestone. Well, Bill Spurley, you're a gentleman who makes these vintage cars go. We just saw Mario Andretti out of the track in that beautiful Dean Van Line Sotka. Tell us about that car.
That's a wonderful car to drive. It's very exceptional. It has a normal aspirated engine in it, made by... And it's a very interesting car. And Clint Browner built this car. And for a Brabham, it's a copy of a Brabham. And it's a very successful one, this car.
You're in charge of so many of these cars that the public can see, also at the museum, but many that they don't see. How much time do you have to spend upkeeping these cars and servicing them and make sure that they're
functional? Well, if you have to use the cars, it will take us a while, till you get it running again. But in general, it don't take this much time. We're taking pretty good care of it when we're done running. We are training the whole system out because that's what does the damage to it. The alcohol deteriorates all the lines and all the tanks and the injection system. So we have to make sure they are drained empty, complete.
Now, do you have parts? Do you have an inventory of spare parts for some of these vehicles?
We have quite a few spare parts for those type of engines. And what they don't have, we have to make.
Do you make them.
Yes.
Now, that's a lost art in all forms of motorsports, isn't it?
Yeah, but in today's technology, you get them made by anybody when you, you know, it's just the price is pretty expensive.
Now, you have a family that's been involved in racing for a long time because your wife's the daughter of one of the premier builders of sprint cars and midgets, Pop Dreyer.
Pop Dreyer, he built a car like in the 40s for Duesenberg. So he was very successful as mechanic, you know, on those cars, on those old vintage cars. And he also built engines for sprint cars and midgets.
A lot of handicraft in these cars. There's a lot of craftsmanship. You have to enjoy that.
Yes, I really enjoy it because you can see the technology and the advancement what has been made through different machine work. But the old handicraft work is still was an art by itself because there are very few people could handcraft those cars like he did.
A lot of this country after World War II in the aircraft industry, how to use light metals and craft that metal, and that really sparked a revolution in our field.
Well, you're surprised, even in the teens and in the 20s, they used aluminum quite extensively to build the cars. Even the metal, the sheet metal, it wasn't with the high quality of the metal they used in aluminum in the teens and the 20s, but the metal was here. And the technology to make this, produce this metal was here. But the things they couldn't get quite the strength out of it.
Now, is your operation ever called to do that kind of work? Do you ever have to reshape metal or...
My brother-in-law still does it because his dad taught him how to do it. And in the past years, all the years I worked here, he was the one who did all the sheet metal work.
Is that a lost art?
It's a lost, almost a lost art. There are few people around, but he uses the more modern technology. The old technology was to hammer the body out by hand.
Right.
What was a pretty hard way to do it. But the new technology... They use the English wheels. It's formed by a wheel. And it's not as hard to work.
Is there anybody following you, though? Is there someone that's following what you and your crew do so we can continue to maintain these cars?
Well, we're trying to teach. Okay. We're trying to teach a lot of those Euro guys. And we had some of them, but nobody has really the interest in it because it's time-consuming and it takes a lot of technical work, you know, to give one.
I'm sure you've been asked this many times, but do you have a personal favorite car?
No. I like all of them, because all the cars in the museum show a certain technology from the era they were built. And it is amazing what you can see from the cars that have been built in the teens and the 20s and the 30s. It's unbelievable. And you have to have very much respect, a lot of respect for those people who built them, because it's unbelievable. With this little machine, automatic machines they had, you know, it was all done by hand, you know. Even the things to work with a mill or a lathe, it was done by hand, but automatic.
The modern race cars.
Yes, I do, because, you know, technology never stops. We live in a different era, and therefore we have in today's racing much different technology in the world of building those race cars.
That's great. Thank you.
You're welcome.